This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You cannot lose like this, you know. Arsenal have 10 men and then you stay back and then you receive two easy goals. So if you stay back, it's difficult to win the game.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now. So I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Here's Grealish, brilliant dribble there towards Wesley! Jack Grealish with a brilliant bursting run, and Wesley, the Predator.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for the preparation for the relegation part, My Old Man Said, look back at the Arsenal game, Mr. Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome.
Hello.
And Mr. Christopher Budd, welcome.
Hello, Christopher.
Hello, Christopher. Hello. So, pleasant Sunday afternoon.
Wonderful.
Exciting game.
Wonderful. Magical.
Well, we'll be discussing that and getting into all the gory details, because once again, Villa were faced with 10 men and didn't really take advantage of the situation, which is a bit of an understatement. But hey-ho, Arsenal, what are they?
Cunts?
Wow, is that what you really mean, Chris? I mean...
Europa League team? Let's not even mention
Europa League group stage reachers.
Champions.
Elect.
Anyway, coming up on the show, we look into what went wrong for Villa yet again. And this time, somehow we managed to leave the Emirates empty-handed. We'll get into that. Also, the 3 points takes us all over the world, all over the place, to cut it short. And no Scott Hogan. We're putting Scott Hogan on ice again because he didn't even bother to play. He's actually third-choice striker. When they decided to freshen it up in their game against Brentford, they didn't even bother looking in the direction of Scott Hogan. Anyway, let's get into the 3 points. Number one, I'll go first. You could make a film about this. There's always a big taboo about this situation, about there's not enough British Asian football players, and you know, do Asians in England get a fair crack when it comes to getting into the English Football League? And Kashif Siddiqui, I think that's how you pronounce it, is one of the few British recognised British Asian professional footballers. He's had a bit of a checkered history in terms of, especially through injury, and he took about 5 years out of the game. He was playing in the States, and then more recently was at Northampton training, and then he ended up at Oxford, but hasn't actually played for any of these teams. I mean, actually, I don't think he's played a competitive match for about 10 years now. He was born in Hammersmith, but he played once for a Pakistan 11. This is going back about 11 years ago. Anyway, he switched from Oxford United to Real Kashmir.
Like you do.
Like you do, to actually get some games. Obviously, the peaceful, tranquil borough of Oxford, he's switched to the most militarized and politically contentious regions in the world.
Must be interesting as someone who's turned out for a Pakistani 11 to arrive in Indian-administered Kashmir. Like, it could be quite interesting for the old passport stamping, couldn't it?
And he's now staying with teammates in a hotel protected by armed guards who are on patrol also during training sessions. And the actual region itself is under curfew and public gatherings are banned. So Real Kashmir can't even play their home games at their ground anymore. And normally they attract crowds of 20,000. I think they've only been going 3 years, if my research is correct.
Already getting more than the Blues.
Well, exactly, yes. So that should be interesting to see. I mean, it kind of reminds me, because he hasn't really played for 10 years, but he keeps getting chances at clubs. It reminds me of that the guy, the Kaiser. There was a film about him, that Brazilian chap who, what's his name? Carlos Enrique Raposo, who basically kept getting moves, like lucrative deals to different clubs in Brazil. He'd turn up at training, he would fake injuries, and then he'd get a move away, and he would just earn his living by just getting contract after contract after contract without actually playing a game.
Oh, they call that the Birka Bjarnason rule. Oh, no. What was it?
I thought that was the Charles and Zogbia move.
Douglas Luiz. Going back to Siddiqui, may get a chance to play against Sir John Gregory's team, who I think they won the Indian Super League there, didn't they? Was it last season? And he extended his contract for another year, so it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out. Anyway, point number two, this one's a bit closer to home, unfinished business, which finally, I don't know what the hold-up's been, but Mr. Chris Budd, point number two.
Birmingham City have been fined the capacity of Villa Park for the Paul Mitchell punch on Grealish. A measly £42,500 of, I would say hard-earned cash, but that would be lying.
£1 for each Villa fan.
So we'll have a whip round at Burnley for the incident. Which,
it's a lot of Villa cash, isn't it?
That is a lot of, it's the choice of pay off the Blues or prize where it lies.
It's three Villa dogs.
Now, in comparison, of course, Villa were fined £200,000 for taking football back to the dark ages after the celebrations where the fans ran on the pitch after beating West Brom. The club have submitted it used all due diligence, but was found to have failed to ensure that its spectators and all persons purporting to be its supporters or followers conducted themselves in an orderly fashion, which is a bit of a strange way of wording it.
Do they have pretend supporters that
surely
turn up
not
in their games? Are they like extras? Do they pay extras to turn up, like actors? Suspicious, isn't it? Very suspicious.
This is a bit strange. Considering they only turn up for Villa Blues.
Exactly. I think they're paid to just to make it, you know, look respectable. Just picking up on this, the Villa Park West Brom one was Dark Ages 2, wasn't it? Because Dark Ages 1 was in that Carling Cup quarterfinal at St Andrews, where that was like a fucking war zone, wasn't
that
it?
That was a war zone. That was a hairy evening.
Well,
out,
that was flares going everywhere, chairs, a police line in the middle of the pitch. It was like...
Horse, yeah. And how much did they get fined for that?
Peanuts. Birmingham were fined 20,000 when a further 20,000 suspended and were warned as to their future conduct. So, you know, potentially a 40,000 fine for quite a lot of supporters running on the pitch.
Serious disorder.
And criminal damage.
So it seems that if you do shit at St Andrews, your fine's hardly anything, because what happened at Villa Park was more like joyous celebration. What happened at St Andrews in the Carling Cup quarterfinal was like a war zone, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in comparison, sort of West Ham were fined 115,000 for running on the pitch and what's considered provocative behaviour. Reading were fined 100,000 for an incident against Bradford where the fans came on the field. Millwall were fined for racist chanting.
In a nutshell then, how much would you have fined them, Chris?
At least 100 grand. Because that seems to be par for the course.
Yeah.
I'd have probably put them into administration.
I mean, I'm with my friend Mr. Rogers, to be honest. I mean,
yeah, well, I mean,
Dan traditionally likes to take a hard line.
I've been to that football ground. I was there the night that David Ellery lost control.
That was a horrible night.
I mean, there's not a lot of scrap value. There's a lot of plastic seats.
And the land value's not great either.
Oh, it's terribly, it's toxic. It stinks of manure, the waft of manure. Oh my goodness.
But £42,000 is, that's one player's wages. That is just insulting.
Yeah. But is it more than a coincidence that that is the capacity of Villa Park?
It's like they forgot about it as well, wasn't it? The FA, that it's suddenly, that'll do.
Who's their arch rivals? How can we wind them up the most? Oh, make it 42,500. Very specific, that 500 as well.
I do quite like that.
I think somebody's got a sense of humour at the FA. Anyway, point number three, Mr. Dan Rogers.
A Norwegian beast unleashed on the Champions League. It's the story of 19-year-old son of Alf Inge Haaland. You'll remember him, former Manchester City and Leeds United midfielder who was on the end of that awful challenge by Roy Keane. The 19-year-old son of has scored a hat-trick on his Champions League debut and that puts him on par with a feat not achieved since Wayne Rooney did the same in 2004. They beat Ghent 6-2. So the funny thing about this kid is that he seems to be perpetually growing, and he made reference in an interview in November 2017 to the fact that he'd only grown 5 centimetres. And last year, he made reference to the fact that he'd grown 11 to 12 centimetres. I mean, this is a 17-year-old who's going to be, frankly, a giant. I mean, in a Villa context, I suppose that the problem that we'd have if this was Wesley, it would just be one of his legs that had grown 11 to 12 centimetres. It looks like there's big things ahead for this kid, and he's got 17 goals in 9 games for Red Bull Salzburg already this season. So don't be surprised if he grows to be bigger than me and you, or even Karu.
Oh, one more thing. Let's just go over to our Iranian desk, Mr. Dan Rogers.
So the latest news from Iran that I'm now entrusted with on a weekly basis is that FIFA have told Iran that they need to allow women into their stadiums, you know, like any first world normal country, I suppose. So they've got to do it ahead of the Human Rights Cup, as we're billing it here, which is the upcoming game in October against Cambodia. Now my research has shown me that this is quite a group. If you wanted a league of human rights infractions, this is a group containing Bahrain, Iran, Iraq, Cambodia, and newly arrived Hong Kong, who are fresh oppressing their population. So get your tickets now.
Before we move on to the Arsenal game, I just want to give a big shout out and thank you to Shane, and he signed up as Shane fucking Dooley. I think he... took a shine to my sentiments towards Huddersfield Town. Dave Boston and also Ivan Millard, thank you very much for signing up as My Old Man Said patrons and supporting the show. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the Patreon option to get more details there and sign up. We are now doing regular weekly shows, one called The Anti-Preview, which is it's a little bit more than your normal preview, which tend to be a bit boring and they kind of go out of date after 2 days. But this preview, we have a few more laughs with the opposition. And also we are doing one called Meanwhile, which is Meanwhile in the rest of the Premier League and also the world of football. So check it out there. Right then, the Arsenal game. As Mr. Rogers says, I think you said on Twitter after the game, Villa managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory against 10 men.
Yep.
I mean, this is it's always interesting, the reaction. Well, it's not interesting anymore, but the different spins that come out of this game. There's people saying, oh, we rattled a top six team, blah, blah, blah.
No, we didn't.
This is the worst Arsenal team. Some Arsenal fans have said it's the worst Arsenal team in the last 30 years.
Probably right.
I mean, this is the Arsenal team that choked against Watford, bottom of the league. Watford, let me just add, in spectacular fashion, throwing away a 2-0 lead. Arsenal... there's so many teams in transition now, it's hard to gauge what is a good result. But, you know, as Norwich did, you just beat what's in front of you. They beat Manchester City. They weren't making excuses before the game going into it. They just put their head down and took care of business. And that's how I think, especially early doors in the season, where Arsenal, Spurs, they're going to be much better come the second half of the season. But at the moment, they're there for the taking. If you get yourself in a position in a game where you can take them, and I mean, we'll discuss the game, but ultimately, we played 10 men for more than, you know, a half, and we were actually, when they went down to 10 men, we were up. I mean, if we were level, I would have probably had some concern trying to break them down, because obviously Villa are not exactly hot in that department. Anyway, let's start from the beginning. And Villa looked great. They looked like they were in control. And it was competitive at the start. You were just basically waiting for Arsenal to go through the gears. But that didn't really happen. I mean, what was your views, Chris, in the opening exchanges?
I think both teams kind of came out of the traps pretty quickly. It was quite a good first half in general for the neutral, I thought. Because it was kind of both teams sort of throwing punches without really having those big openings. I think for actually the way Arsenal were set up, especially in the middle of the park, it actually played into our hands for once, than being, because they were quite open. I wouldn't ever class Arsenal as kind of a nasty team who were going to bully you physically. And it seemed to play into the hands of sort of Grealish, who actually got a bit of time on the ball to play. McGinn could drive through the middle of the park. I thought Marvellous had another good game, especially in the first half. I thought Trezeguet had probably the best 45 minutes to an hour he's had in a Villa shirt yet. I thought him and Gilbert on the right-hand side had a really good partnership, especially going forward. You saw exactly how Smith wants them to play, and he wants them to bomb on as a pair. I thought we had a lot of energy, and I would say that, you know, at half time we were probably good value for the lead.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at half time the feeling was, oh, this is looking rosy. I mean, at early doors there was a few things I thought we haven't learned from West Ham. I mean, there was a chance, I think it's just before around 8-10 minutes, where I don't know if it was El Ghazi flashed it into Wesley, but it was one of those where suddenly, like, hang on a minute, there's only Wesley in the box here. He was surrounded by Arsenal players, and the ball came out, and it basically came out to the edge of the 18, and you thought, why is not McGinn or Grealish there? Because this is, you know, this is a ball that's, it's asking for it. But then late, you know, then Grealish also, there was still that kind of niggling thing where we were doing the hard work. Like 10 minutes later, Grealish broke through the middle with purpose, and then I think he tried an outside of the foot ball to the right hand side, but it wasn't really, you know, played with any kind of conviction or snap on it. And he just thought, he's done the hard bit, why when it's just a matter of sliding in the winger? Is he trying something that just seemed to be as a lack of confidence?
It was strange, because actually when we played a very simple game, as is normally the case with Villa, when we just played really simply and incisive and at pace, we really hurt them. Like when Trezeguet, yeah, was like the simple balls down the channels or just down the line, or letting Gilbert or Trezeguet just run with the ball, just get you up the field quickly. Arsenal were kind of like, oh shit, they're actually coming to have a go at us today. Which obviously, you know, a lot of teams will go to Arsenal and park the bus. Villa didn't in the first half.
Yeah, and what we've been screaming for is for the, you know, the centre mids, at least one of them, to get up there and support Wesley and be a threat on any cross. I mean, actually transpired. Yeah, and actually transpired. And as you said, El Ghazi got a simpler ball in, and there was McGinn to obviously put it away. And at that stage, you know, regardless of the sending off, you thought, oh, actually, this isn't too bad. Okay, you know, maybe Arsenal might go through the gears, as I mentioned. But in that moment, we were looking pretty decent.
I mean, I thought in the first half, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be saying, well, clearly we're technically the better team and we're playing very nice, the usual tick-attacker Arsenal football where it's one or two passes too many all the time. But Villa were on top because Villa were working harder. Yeah. And when we didn't have the ball, we worked so hard to get it back, and then we'd try and push, you know, through the gears a little bit to try and get up, you know, and support Wesley where possible, who I thought, while he was frustrated at times, I actually thought he put a bit of a shift in. He worked reasonably hard. I thought McGinn worked tirelessly to get up as close to him as possible. I thought the two wide men were better than they were in previous weeks.
Because there was a lot of talk, obviously, going into this game about Arsenal's defence. I mean, this is obviously from Arsenal fans, and, you know, they were even to the point of, if they don't win this, then it should be Emery out time, which, you know, is usual for Arsenal fans.
And you have to play on stuff like that, don't you? That has
exactly
to play to your advantage, which they did well, but you have to keep going, yeah, which we'll come on to, that they clearly didn't do.
Because it's in their mind, and obviously they're looking to put that right, and it's their manager's been publicly talking about it, talking about mixing it up and going a bit longer. So there's a seed of doubt in there, and that's the thing you've got to pour the water on and try to get that doubt growing.
Especially when, you know, when the red card comes, which I think the referee generally got most of the decisions through the game right, the red card being one of them. You could see their fans when they sort of trudged off at half time. They clearly weren't happy.
Yeah.
And actually Maitland-Niles had probably been their kind of out ball, and the one who looked to be causing Taylor especially, him and Nicolas Pepe caused him all sorts of problems down the right. They looked the most likely to make something happen. So that must have given Villa a psychological boost, thinking we can actually get at these guys a bit more now in the second half.
Did you not think that the half-time whistle came at a great time for Arsenal, though?
Forget about the half-time whistle. I've got a question for you, Rodgers.
Go for it.
You've got a player on the ground, he's injured, and the ref, and he's on a yellow, and he's going to get another yellow, and it's undisputable. Why wait for, like, 5 minutes until they kind of, let's take... Why don't just give him that second yellow, give him the red card, and get him off the fucking pitch as quickly as possible?
It's the theatre, David. It's the drama. It's the... What? Will you never be satisfied?
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
I enjoyed it.
It's the slow kill of a trophy hunt.
I enjoyed it.
You know, like a fat American, you've just got to lie across the kill, haven't you? Like a Premier League referee enjoys doing.
And take a picture of yourself.
It does put that. Oh, is he not sending him off? What's going on here? Because I mean, you know, some fans wouldn't have realised that he's already had a yellow, and the referee was walking around with a yellow in his hand.
Well, 40,000 day trippers to the Emirates certainly weren't even paying attention.
they were tucking into their popcorn, weren't they?
They were.
And then he flips out the red and off he goes. Obviously, it was the second yellow. But yeah, now at that stage, you're thinking, oh, happy days, 1-0 up, 10 men.
Yeah. But this is Aston Villa.
Aston Villa. And to be fair, I mean, Arsenal did find a bit of their old spirit, but we'll get on to that. I mean, I think Dean Smith does better when he's down to 10 men than he does against 10 men, you know, based on our experience so far.
Yeah. I think a couple of things happened in game, that especially around the red card, that Arsenal had half time to regroup, and I think that they'd had a particularly subdued opening 45. There was no way we could keep up the level of intensity that we'd built. I think our subs were very, very late. But I think that what's been mentioned before, and I've sort of been sitting listening here really, that the midfield battle was the key, and we were on top. We were on top for long periods. We always had the red card that went in our favour. But we stopped doing what was so successful and what created our goals, which was that burst beyond the striker or in support of Wesley that we spoke about in the last podcast. That if you look at the goals today, McGinn's in an advanced position for the second goal that Wesley gets. That Grealish does that fantastic burst. Not only from deep, but to the byline, essentially, and cuts the ball back for Wesley. And those are the things that, when for some reason, when either we tired or our tactics changed or from instruction off the pitch, we lost our way.
I mean, the main thing that changed it was just the intensity that Arsenal were playing with. I mean, you know, for example, there was one moment where the Villa centre-back, I can't remember if it was Mings or Engels, was, you know, just had the ball, was taking it out the back, and suddenly the furthest three Arsenal, all of them charged at him, and he obviously panicked and, you know, released it waywardly. And I was thinking, wow, we haven't got that.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't got that left. Either we're being a bit complacent because in the back of the heads they're thinking, oh, we're playing 10 men here. We, you know, we can just play it cool and ride this one out. But Arsenal were like, they're playing like a team possessed. I mean, kind of props to them. But at the same time, you know, in the Premier League, you got a man advantage for a good chunk of time, over a half. And you're 1-0 up as well.
I thought there was a bit of a contradiction in what we were trying to do. At the key moment that Smith made the same, in my view, error that he did against West Ham, that we saw Al Mohammadi, and I'm actually a fan. I think that technically he does bring things to the team.
But what stage did he come on?
Well, exactly, and then it was late. But the contradiction I'm referring to was that we were getting deeper, we were retreating on the pitch, and that message wasn't getting through. And because Smith was balling the team forward, but in my view, that if you bring Al Mohammadi on, that's a defensive switch.
Yeah, completely
in my head,
and that's what he was doing.
And,
yeah.
And it seemed contrary to then see him trying to wave the team up the pitch. Do you know what I mean? At a time where, we were playing against 10 men, but actually we should have been looking to get the third. And it seemed to be that he sent the wrong message with the substitution and also with the type of player that he brought on. And then his message onto the field was the opposite of what he could achieve with the player that he brought. So it was, you know, there's been some mention that he should have brought Davis on. You know, I don't think Davis is a complete player, but I absolutely do think he would have given Arsenal something to think about and would have reinforced any message that Smith wanted to put onto the pitch that we should be further up it. And a bit strange for me.
What, Davis on for who? Because I mean, we really struggled to keep any semblance of possession.
Well, exactly, and we needed someone who could hold the ball. I think Davis could have done that.
But are we talking about going two up top?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that we could have done that. I think that would have given Arsenal, lacking a man, they would have had to have commit someone, an additional player back, and it would have given them food for thought.
And then we could go longer on the counter.
Well, Davis, I think, can hold the ball better than Wesley as well. And, you know, I just think Al Mohammadi was the wrong sub. And then, as I say, the tactics that seemed to be being pushed onto the field from the dugout, it just didn't work at all. And I think it invited what inevitably happened.
Because at the stage where Arsenal, I mean, they got the penalty, which I don't know what Engels was doing, because...
Clumsy.
It was clumsy at the end of the day.
Well, he plants his foot, doesn't he? Allows the player to just go, there you go, just go over my leg, because knowing exactly full well it's going to be a penalty. It's such an easy decision for the ref.
He put it on a plate for him. But then you thought, fuck. But the way that Villa, within 89 seconds, Wesley had put Villa back ahead, and with half an hour to go, you thought, well, that's a slap in the face. Slap in the face for Arsenal, and there's surely only one way this is going to go now. We've got to regain the momentum, and this should kick on.
Great response, actually.
Yeah, no, completely. And so that was the surprise that, I mean, if Arsenal had continued after they'd equalised to give us hell and then gone 2-1 up, then you think, well, this is bullshit. But the fact that we actually got ahead again, reversed that momentum, although just temporarily, you thought, well, you know, here we go. And we did need that third goal ASAP. We needed to be two goals ahead, really, didn't we?
I mean, this is where Smith's message of, and I mean, it's been the same ever since he's arrived at Villa, and he's sort of talked a good game with it, in that, you know, if you're 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go, if you're 2-1 up, whatever, you go and get the third, because I think if we'd have got the third, it would have killed the game.
Yeah, completely. If we had just gone two goals ahead against 10 men, then I think that they wouldn't have believed they could have won that game. I mean, I'm talking about Arsenal.
So. We had the spell at the start of the second half where we missed a couple of good chances, and you thought Villa are very much on top here. I think Arsenal probably thought, do you know what, if we can ride out this period, we might be able to grow back into the game, which they did. Villa obviously gifted the penalty. Then to go behind, if you're them, you must be thinking, ah, maybe we've kind of fucked this. But then they would have probably been expecting the Villa onslaught, you know, and because the first 10 minutes of the second half, Villa actually looked to be trying to control the tempo of the game. Yeah. They were playing it along the back. They were playing through the fielders, through the lines and stuff. And you thought, oh, that Villa looked to have a certain amount of control in possession, and then we kind of took the lead again. And whether it was we ran out of steam, I don't know. I think it might be a fitness thing, yeah. Because I just think we just ran out of legs. It was the same against West Ham, where you think at 2-1, that's where you go stick or twist, isn't it? You go, right, are we going to be proactive? Then you make the change. We've taken the lead. Yeah. Now we're going to go and kill the game. Not we've taken the lead, and now we're going to just see what happens.
The two obvious things, if you like, and these are the obvious things from my end, with the benefit of hindsight, and you can, you know, you start looking at, you know, the highlights, and you're thinking, well, that's obvious that he's blowing there. He's, you know, for me in game, both McGinn and Grealish's matches were probably run at 70 minutes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
For me, we've got to, you know, it takes a very brave manager, I think, to take off two marquee players, but I think, especially against, when you're thinking, well, we probably do need a third. I think the second thing, just as a final point, that coincided was that I think it also coincided with both of our centre halves making a chronic mistake in game.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And that hasn't happened really all season. I think the Engels one that you just mentioned, but also how Mings didn't deal with the ball, heading it in between Taylor and the Arsenal striker for the second.
Yeah, I mean, that second goal is horrible. The more you watch it back, it's just pathetic defending.
Two mistakes that result in obviously goals for a slick team like Arsenal is you can't gift a team where they've got 10 or 11 players on the pitch. So those are the two things for me. I think our fitness, our game was run at 70 minutes and we needed some subs and two dreadful mistakes.
That Matteo Guendouza, the Arsenal player.
Yes, with a stupid
haircut.
How
do you pronounce that?
Fuck knows.
Sideshow
number two. Sideshow Junior. Junior, Mathieu, who I thought was David Luiz a few times from behind. His hair.
He had a good game.
Yeah,
he's
for 20 years old. He certainly, I mean, he drove them on. He was the difference in terms of transitioning 10 men into a winning team.
Yeah,
we had a 20-year-old South American.
And a special word for Mr. Kalinac, who made an appallingly embarrassing job of trying to get Wesley sent off.
But it makes a change from Wesley trying to get himself sent off for diving.
Yeah, good point.
As we discussed in the last show, if you remember that.
Nice to see him in front of goal, to be honest, though, and actually getting chances, because I'd imagine he's been pretty frustrated. You know, his actual shots to goals ratio at the moment must be actually really
pretty
good.
Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, because every time he gets in the six-yard box, he seems to bury it.
Do we know at this stage what happened to Douglas Luiz?
He's in Brazil partying. I don't know where the surprise is.
Smith didn't select him, did he?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, Brazil. Yeah. Did he say after the game why?
Yeah, he just simply said, Marvellous had had a good game against West Ham. I've got Lansbury, I've got Hourihan, I've got the options for this one. He didn't fit into my plans.
Because you would be thinking at that stage, and if you know, if this goes for Lansbury as well, then it's time to take off Grealish or McGinn if they're blowing, as you guys has phrased it.
I think they can't be immune to being pulled off if they've put in a good shift, and both of them had. I thought actually Grealish had one of his better games since he's been back in the Premier League. McGinn had a fantastic kind of first hour. But if you need to make that change for the good of the team, even if it's a potentially unpopular one, you have to make that. That's part of, you know, being a strong manager, being proactive and giving the opposition something different to think about. Because if you lose the energy of McGinn, that's the main thing that he brings to the team.
Because I don't see what Smith was doing there to combat the fact that we were so deep and they were pressing us, and you know they were so intense. There was no, like, we didn't have any wide men. For example, we look at that bench. I mean, I looked at it before the game, as I did in the last, you know, all season so far, and you just think there's nothing there where you can, like, right, we're in this situation, right, we're going to bring on this guy and it's going to completely change the dynamic of things. And what we needed was fast guys on the wing, basically set up for the counter. Because if we're getting pressed in like that and they're swarming us, you know, it's just long ball counter attack to the wing. But you've got Elmo, who's not the fastest guy.
No.
El Ghazi, who he's hot and cold. And I mean, we spoke before about when you're playing like the top teams, and you know, you still consider Arsenal as one of the top teams, there was always the potential that you could go for that two defensive midfielders, the two deeper sitters, Nakamba and Luiz, and both of them are reasonably cool on the ball, and then you've got a platform to actually have some possession and try to take the sting out of Arsenal's tenacity.
But that's why today was a great example of how I think that we're still feeling our way in this division, because though Jota didn't set the world on fire against West Ham, and this is where I'm linking into my observation of Grealish at 70 minutes. You could swap a Jota into the tempo and the pace of today's game at 70 minutes, and I think it would make sense. You know, you're not going to get bags and bags of pace, but you'll get composure, you'll get, you know, neat interplay, and I don't understand why those players didn't appear when, you know, we've got limited options, like you say, off the bench, and I'll go back to my earlier point about Davis, that Davis is far from the complete footballer, still a development footballer, if anything. But for where we're at in terms of either protecting a lead or even building upon it with 10 men was the obvious choice for me.
Yeah, because if you get him up close to Wesley, and you can play a bit longer ball, and
yeah.
You know, they can hold it up and play between themselves, but basically take minutes off the clock as well.
Exactly.
And give Arsenal something to think about rather than just giving them a free run at us.
It's baffling, actually.
It was annoyingly similar to the Spurs game. And that's where I know I mentioned it online. Other people have. Various people in the press have said Smith and Villa, well, they haven't learnt.
Yeah.
There's little things that they're just not learning. Now, maybe Smith, you know, after the game, he's come out and said, you know, I didn't want them to play that. We didn't know. It's not in the plan to sit deep. But there's a reason why that team is dropping back to their 18-yard line and kind of retreating.
Against 10 men.
Because that's not in Grealish, the way Grealish plays. It's not how McGinn plays. I can't imagine it's how Nakamba plays. And you kind of think, well, if their race is run, you know, you've got Hourihan, you've got Lansbury, you've got people who will get on the ball and play. Because I think if you control possession of the ball cleverly, you know, the whole game management, you win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I tweeted sort of flippantly that a good team would have put five past Arsenal today. And they would have, because they would have just bided their time, picked them off on the break. Because Arsenal's defence, let's be brutally honest, is poor.
Yeah.
You know, their front line will rescue them in numerous games. They did today. But more often than not, their back four will be their Achilles heel.
And we saw a glaring example of what Dean Smith has flagged already about we have not had that domination of possession. And, you know, when you've got an extra man, that's always a good leg up to allow yourself to have that kind of domination of possession.
It's playing smart, isn't it? And we haven't yet.
And we didn't put Arsenal under pressure at any stage when they were down to 10 men.
And it's also the thing of...
sustained pressure.
And we've talked about the whole thing of like fitness and running their race. And I think you look at the really top sides and they conserve energy by letting the ball do the work. I always think, having seen Villa this season, they're having to work so hard from the word go to win it back, to push on. It's a very dynamic game and it makes for a great 45 minutes to watch in the first half. But you can't sustain that for 90 minutes. Whereas if you've got control of the ball, you can pick your time and go, right, now we're going to go. You actually have a little bit in the tank, don't you?
And this is meant to be the hallmark of how Dean Smith plays. People make excuses at the end of games, in hindsight. But we are talking, it doesn't matter who we're playing, West Ham, Arsenal. Oh yeah, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be in the Champions League this season. Or they're, you know, we've given a Europa League team a good game. It doesn't matter. You have in game, you have an opportunity to win. And at this level, at this time of the season, a lot of teams are finding their feet. You know, they're not at full strength. You know, Norwich beat Manchester City, as we mentioned earlier. And if you have an opportunity, you've got to beat them. You've got to take points from where you can get them. I mean, we've got one win in six now. And who are you highlighting for wins? It doesn't work like that at this moment in time because we don't know what we are. We don't know where our level is. So if you've got opportunities, let's face it. West Ham were never looking like they were going to win that game against Villa. It was up to Villa to turn it on. And against Arsenal, just break it down. You're 1-0 up. You're against 10 men. It's half time. What more do you want going into a second half?
I mean, it was almost like the perfect first half of Villa. Smith would have bitten your hand off to say, right, you'll be 1-0 up against 10 men and you'll be dominating.
Any team, yeah. Any team would have loved
any
that.
Any team. You know, Arsenal are always going to have little chances, but I don't remember, you know, Heaton having, you know, he had a couple of sort of saves you'd expect him to make, very routine ones, but Arsenal weren't all over us at any point with 11 men.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, he said it himself. It's just, again... it's kind of becoming a really fucking boring broken record. It's another opportunity missed because we could very easily, unfortunately, we could be unbeaten.
Well, there are much harder tests that lie in front of us, I think, as well.
If we'd beaten Arsenal today like we should have done and we beat West Ham, and this is, you know, in game, the opportunity was there. We would be knocking on the top four at the moment, and it's a fine margin, but I mean, today's example, I started to get that feeling, are we that team that, oh yeah, they're competitive in a game, but they just don't have that look, or they just don't have that kind of end product. And these are the teams that gets a round of applause after the game, but then they get relegated because they just didn't take their opportunity finally. They had that bad look or, you know, whatever excuse. I just don't want to be that team because you know the feeling of a team when it's getting relegated, and hopefully we can stop that.
I mean, it's always been a pet peeve of mine, this thing of, oh, but we played well.
Yeah.
Not yet. I mean, we said this, you know, in little periods during the early Smith reign is, you know, is good football winning football? You know, I'd have much rather played like park the bus, nick a 1-0 and grind it out. But as we've said numerous times, this Villa team under Smith, we don't grind his team. That's not what his teams do. They didn't do it at Brentford. They didn't do it at Warsaw. They don't play badly and win. That's what newly promoted teams have to do. You have to go away and nick the win at Arsenal. You know, if you go there and blow a team away, fair enough. But you're not just going to turn up to these every team you play against, play expansive football, have 70% of the ball, and blow them away. Sometimes you have to be a bit more pragmatic and just get the fucking job done.
But going back into that, the 10-game running win, we did play badly and win in that run, and that's what kept it going because, you know, we kind of took our foot off the pedal. And, you know, the Rotherham game where we almost threw it away kamikaze style, but we managed to grind that out. So there is that spirit there, but obviously we're playing a lot lower level of opposition there and potentially can get away with it.
We're playing a lot lower level of opposition. I think that somehow they'd managed to form quite a close unit of players in the short time that they'd been at the club that has since been largely disbanded. And I think that the other thing that's occurred to me the last couple of weeks particularly is that this is frighteningly new territory for our head coach. That Smith finds himself in a division against some of, you know, not just the best players, the best coaches, some of the best setups, some of the, you know, we're talking, Villa have took a step up and have the benefit of having been able to dip in and spend 100 plus million pounds. You know, we come up against teams who've got hundreds of millions of pounds of and years of advancement. You know, this isn't just about us reappearing into the Premier League and being the plucky newcomers, as we've been discussing. I'm not sure Smith's playing the game plan that's necessarily served him well through his managerial career, really. And I think today I thought that against Spurs. I thought it against Bournemouth, and I thought it again against West Ham, where I thought I think maybe we're trying to adapt here, and we're feeling our way, and we're not making all the right choices tactically. You know, we've been sold this notion, or we're being marketed this notion that Smith is free thinking, radical, and will, you know, we've got to be entertaining with a win at all costs kind of approach. I don't see that. I know there's been a conservatism, both with selection and in-game substitutions.
Jack Grealish admitted that you're talking about conservatism. He said he hadn't really gambled and hadn't played in that zone where
it's too deep.
Zone, just like in terms of, you know, mentally as well, where that's where you see who's great, you know, who's a great player and who dictates a game and who influences a game.
I mean, McGinn said the same. Ming said it after the game at Arsenal. Smith has mentioned it, that this thing of, we've got to believe when you go on the pitch, you've got to, do you know what? Yeah, we can hurt these, because when you go in at half-time at Arsenal and you're 1-0 up against 10 men, if you're a half-decent Premier League side, you've got to go, this is our opportunity and we're going to take this.
Yeah, that's what you should be saying at half-time.
25 minutes to go against West Ham, you've got to be looking over at your bench at Smith when their guy's walking off down the tunnel going, right, what are we going to do now? Let's go for the win.
Yeah.
Are you going to change it? Are we going to go for this? And that's what the fans want to see. I'd have happily seen us lose today if we'd have actually really gone for it in the second half and gone, do you know what? Yeah. We're going to try and kill the game, but we might get picked off on the break. People would go, well, it's frustrating, but it happens, and they're a good team and they can pick you off. But we went for it. But don't park the bus and then fail to... It's like we're almost stuck between two plans.
Don't park the bus and then not try to pick them off.
Yeah.
It's been stuck between two plans, because if I look at some of those teams who, like, for instance, under Mourinho, if he wanted to shut a game down, he could make it turgid. Like when he was at Inter, I remember when Inter beat, was it Barcelona? And he just went, do you know what? We're in a great position. We are going to ruin this game.
Yeah.
Well, that was a Mourinho team with a striker who'd never scored any goals, and they won the Champions League. You know, he was the architect of, like you say, shutting down any opposition team through ruthless game management.
Yeah.
You know, that everyone had a role. And I think that the annoying thing about today is that, you know, we've just talked huge swathes about how we got ourselves, despite Arsenal getting back into the game, within a minute or half a minute, we're ahead again.
Yeah.
And we had half an hour to dictate what happened. And the crazy thing is, it was almost, part of me thinks, did we think the job was done? You know, and then that comes down to individuals as much as anything.
Because, I mean, psychologically, as we've already mentioned, you thought, right, yeah, we're going to win this game. There's the bloody proof of the pudding.
Because that's where the thing of, you, in your head, you're thinking, well, Smith tells us he's going to go for broke. This is his perfect opportunity to put his plan into action against a good side. Or if you want to shut the game down, shut it down properly.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do that, you bring on, you know, in years, you know, in last season, it would be you'd bring Glenn Whelan or Mila Jedinak on or whoever, you know, you'd bring on your spoiler.
Yeah.
But you bring on El Mohamed, it's a bit of a nothing change, or there was no obvious sort of, right, we're going for it, or right, we're clearly parking the bus now and we're going to go five at the back, because we could have actually gone five at the back and probably shut them down.
Well, it didn't freshen anything up, though. I mean, it's not Al Mohamed's fault he gets brought on, by the way. But it sends absolutely the wrong message as well. That was a great opportunity where you could have just to bring some fresh legs in that middle part of the pitch, where you can consolidate what you've got. And the huge benefit that, I've spoken already, that we could have gone two up quite easily. That you can stretch the game, you can waste the game, you can do. But why we fell back on our 18-yard line when we were in complete control? This isn't the great, most fluid Arsenal team
without any real out ball, really.
Yeah,
I mean we haven't got wingers who are like pacey and tricky, you know. They're basically, you know the ones that get you off your seats, the ones that can engage with their whole, you know, back line once they're charging down the wing, the ball's in front of them and off they go.
Do you think it's just a lack of belief?
I don't think so, personally, because I think that even in game you saw that if you do that, like, Grealish burst through and demonstrated that, you know, that free-flowing style where you can be creative, burst into the space, cut back, you score. You know, Wesley's finish was very, very, very tidy. That was the proof for me that there's belief there.
And there's clearly enough to suggest over what we've seen so far, and again at the Emirates, that, well, we can clearly compete at this level.
Let's talk about the incident, this supposed handball incident, where everybody's in claret and blue glasses at this stage and saying that's a blatant penalty, that's a blatant penalty. And obviously the penalty laws, I mean, they change every fucking season. But if that was the other way around, and it's like, well, if it's not given, then, well, it's, you know, handball is handball. And that's pretty high up. I can understand why it's not given. I'm not saying, you know, what I'm saying is it's not 100%.
That's what I was going to say. I've got two controversial things I'm probably going to throw at them and probably quickly try and shut up. Is the way the ball's fired at him live. Yeah. And the thing that makes people, I think, myself included, initially go handball, was that he moves his arm out, but it hits him on the angle of the arm and the shoulder, yeah, doesn't it? It's not I think it's the action as much as anything that makes you think handball. What I would say is if it was a handball, I'm gonna go against what Chris said earlier. I don't think the Arsenal man should have been sent off for the second challenge. I think he wins the ball and then he takes it, Taylor.
Have you just converted to Arsenal mid-podcast?
Well, you know, they've got a prominent fan TV channel. It's time that, you
Dan's
know.
Just auditioning. Man like Dan.
Well, the talent.
Now listen here, blood.
I'm going to leave that.
Now, blood. I'm not buying that blood.
It's one of these decisions.
Oh, come on,
where
fan.
It's one of those decisions, the Horahan one, where have you seen them given? Yes.
Yeah.
But if it happens against you, are you raging? Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But if that was in our box and Arsenal got a penalty for that, I think we would be up in arms as well.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, you'd be raging, yeah, if it's given against,
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah, 100%.
But that's where the grey area with handball is. The thing against the Arsenal guy is this isn't a point-blank shot, is it? He's far enough away.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you get those little ones where it's flicked up and there's no way in hell he can react to it. But, and do you know what? To be brutally honest, for the way we played, similar to other games where we maybe haven't got a break, I just think, do you know what? Did we do enough to deserve a break at that point in the game?
No, not at all.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, it's like, are we getting any luck? No, but are we earning ourselves any luck?
Scabbing around at the death for a penalty.
Yeah,
if you blame it on that and then move on, then it's like you're not looking at the problem, because that wasn't the problem. That wasn't the reason why we didn't get anything from this game.
Do you still think it was a sending off, Chris? I'll give you 2 minutes to go and look at the video again.
Yeah, I do. Well, it goes to VAR, doesn't it, to make sure it's not a straight red? Because he gets a little bit of the ball, but he goes straight
over
the top. Oh,
you're relying on VAR now, are you? He changed your tune.
You don't need to, Dan. You can see it live in real time.
I would entertain this discussion if he hadn't had a yellow card before.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's the thing. Because he's on a yellow. Is it a stupid tackle? Yeah. Like, if player did that, you'd be like, what are you doing, you twat? Yeah.
If we were arguing over should that be a straight red, then that's a conversation, but yellow card, that's fine.
Doesn't matter, I'm an Arsenal fan now.
I mean, you compare that to the second yellow on Monday night against West Ham. Was that a red? Clearly not. So we've had two reds go our way and you think, oh God.
There's this virtue signalling that I see on social media where people are going, oh, I can't believe people are already saying Smith out. There's blah, blah, blah. And I would see these tweets and I don't see anything on my timeline people saying Smith out.
Criticism, really, isn't it? That's all it is.
You know, obviously we've seen this over the bloody years because we've been in so many dark corners. But it's the same people doing it. And it's not the first time where, I mean, this is early days in a managerial career in terms of Smith. And I'm looking at my timeline, I think, well, unless I'm just following smarter people, nobody's going crazy saying Smith out, they are, we're never going to go anywhere with Smith, et cetera, et cetera. It's just people, they've probably seen it once or twice from some psychopath or, you know, numpty. And... suddenly,
it's the twat at the back.
Suddenly reacted, you know, making some grand self-virtuous statements when it doesn't really exist. But it all builds this big fire that there's the Smith out and the Smith in, and you know, that's bullshit. No, nobody with half a brain's thinking Smith out.
I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, it would have been a really interesting sort of place online to see if Villa would have been 3-0 down and down to 10 men at half time, but come back in the second half and scored 2 goals. That the fans would have been going, oh yeah, fucking buzzing for Burnley on Saturday. Yeah. We've got all the momentum going into the game. And you think, what? It's you know, it's just a false narrative.
It's a bit more of akin to banging your head against a wall in terms of, because it's another game. I mean, like Spurs, if we got a draw out of Spurs, I think we would have been chuffed with that. Even though we were 1-0 up with, you know, a matter of minutes to play, I think we were expecting for Spurs to score at some point in that game. But this game was different. There was a real opportunity to win, a la the West Ham game, and that's the frustration here.
They feel like missed opportunities.
Yeah, and then you start to look at the league table, which is starting to have credence. I mean, we're only a few more games away from credence. And then you're looking at one win, one win in six, and then it's, well, what kind of games are we expected to win? Because, you know, Burnley are going to be no pushovers when they turn up at Villa Park.
Nope.
Norwich, I mean, Norwich are looking at us and thinking, well, there's 3 points.
Fresh meat.
All of a sudden, you're looking down the fixture list through sort of, you know, the end of September, October and into
praying
November
for Wolves,
and you're all of a sudden you're piling pressure on yourself.
Exactly.
You're thinking, well, we've got Burnley at home. Well, that's the team who are going to be around us. We've got to win that. We've got to go to Norwich. You've got to get a result. Then you got Brighton at home in October. We think, well, we've got to get a result there because we've got Man City away the next week, and then the week after that you've got Liverpool
at
home.
8-0.
So it's kind of like you're really piling the pressure on to get these results against teams you know are going to be around you, because we've already...
Oh, it's like 2015 all over again. I've missed it.
Then you remind people, well, the two teams that you're expected to be around us, Palace and Bournemouth, they both beat us. So this is the issue here. It doesn't matter who we're playing. We've got to take any opportunity to get points. We've had two great, great opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And...
unexpected ones as well.
Exactly, that's a good point.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a strange one because you can reconcile, well, before the game, we'd have, you know, if we got beat 3-2 by Arsenal, you'd have thought, well, you know, fair enough. If you got a draw against West Ham, you thought, fair enough. But it's not how the game actually in-game panned out. So you leave that with your confidence taken a bash, morale's a little bit down, because you players are mentally, they're thinking, well, we've squandered an opportunity there. So it's not exactly raising you up for the next game, if you know what I mean. Mentally, it's putting you on a bit of a downer.
And you don't want to be going into 6-pointers in September.
Yeah.
Which, while I don't think it's necessarily a 6-pointer in terms of the actual... literal league table, in terms of over the course of the 38 games, is this the kind of game that Villa have to be winning? Absolutely.
Well, you can't win one in six, I know that. And
yeah, you get relegated. That's, you know, that's simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's simple maths, isn't it? And I don't think that's, you know, people will often have done over the years come from the side and scream negativity and stop calling us the doomsday merchants, I suppose. There has to be a realism. And I think that my view is that we could be in a lot better shape than we are, had it not been for a large number of unforced errors.
That's the hot take, is the errors. We're doing the hard part, and then, like in that, especially in the final third, just these unforced errors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everybody knew it would be difficult, but...
Yeah.
You kind of have. I think nobody would have given a shit if we'd have gone to the Emirates and got hammered 4-5 if we'd have actually ground out the win against West Ham.
Yeah.
You know, if you can pick up those points where you think, yeah, we could do with a win tonight, brilliant. And then games like Arsenal and City, Liverpool, etc., they're all bonus games.
Mm.
But we haven't actually been really spanked yet.
You wait till the Etihad.
when we're wearing that fucking Spider-Man green kit, third kit as well.
Oh, God, we're not wearing
it. They just designed it for the beating. Chris, you mentioned earlier on, we'll come to the end talking about this game. I mean, a lot of what transpired in this game is what we spoke about in episode 85, where we talked about deficiencies on the flanks. And one guy that was obviously back that didn't play against West Ham was Trezeguet. You gave him a big, well, first 45 minutes, you said you were impressed by him. I kind of beg to differ. What grade would you give him?
I'd give him a B. It's more... So, you know, a step in the right direction. You kind of look at him and go, yeah, that's the player that we were kind of expecting, with more to come. But
when it's those moments, those defining moments, he's had a couple where he's had, when he's through and he's had a shot, and he had one today, and it's just like, should he be shooting from there? Because it was never going to trouble the keeper. He's not that player when he's through. I'm not expecting anything, is what I'm saying. I'm not expecting anything from him.
I mean, I think you could apply that to a few of our players at the moment.
Why are you giving him a B, just out of interest?
Because I think it was very much a step in the right direction. I look at where he's been in previous games, and I think, do you know what? That was a much improved performance. Is he the finished article? Absolutely not. But in terms of, did he show enough that he knows what his job is and he has the potential to do some team's damage? Absolutely. Because he was the outball, and I think he did a really good job with that. I think he's going to obviously have to build a relationship with Gilbert. That will be important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think probably Gilbert helped him a lot because Gilbert was bombing on with him. They were almost running next to each other at some point. Yeah, yeah. In terms of was his final product there? Not always. Did he get into a good position? And yet again, like so many of the other players of late, you think just wrap your foot around it and deliver. Or actually, if you're going to have a shot, have a shot. Just back yourself. And it's the same applies to so many of them. I've said it to umpteen the bloody starting lineup. Just back your ability and go for it. I'm not going to like moan at you if you put on a over the bar, but have a go.
You can almost hear his brain whirring at the moment. Should I pass this? Should I shoot? Should I pass? And it's, as you said, you've got to back your own ability.
Yes. We're not an oiled unit that's playing on instinct at the moment. I think there's a lot of people who are having to really kind of process a lot. Yeah.
What grade would you give Mr. El Ghazi, Dan?
I think El Ghazi's has been one of our most underwhelming performers this season.
But in this game,
In this game, I gave him a very low rating for the game. I was just, as we were talking about Trezeguet, I was just actually looking back at what I scored him. I think he was one of our poorer performers overall. I give him a C-. All the ability, overplays, and doesn't give, not a team player for me. Needs to be more of a team
player. What would you say, Chris, in terms of grade?
I'd go with a C. And that's only because he got the assist. If you take the assist off him, his score's plummeting.
Just one final one, just an interesting one. This is a grade for the season thus far. Jack Grealish, do you want a drum roll?
In terms of... I'm going to, do you know what? But based on his own expectation, I'm going to say a C.
You fat bastard.
I'm going to say a C.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because I think he's had some really good moments, but by his own expectations, has he reached his own heights? No, because he said he hasn't himself. That's not to say he's been bad by any means, but has he reached the level of hype that was built up for him before the season? No.
I think that's a fair comment. And Dan, what would you give him?
I'll give him a B-. Just to annoy Chris, because it's slightly more than a C.
I was singing C+, but I was quite happy to back Chris's judgment there. Because as he says, it's the potential, isn't it? It's what he could bring to the table, what we need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but Neil Lamptey had potential.
I mean, what a run that was.
He didn't have all the hype.
Julian Joachim had potential.
No, he was a club foot.
Club neck, no neck.
Julian Joachim did score goals, though.
He did, to be fair, yeah.
That's true.
He was super sub, wasn't he, for a long time?
Right, we'll obviously discuss, I'm hoping for a better, brighter performance against Burnley. It's going to be a draw in the next podcast.
We're going to win, Dave.
We promise you we will bring a Scott Hogan touch count meter for your
He hasn't for turned
your pleasure.
Up for a while, has
no,
he?
He's, as I mentioned at the top of the show, he didn't play. I mean, they took Lee Gregory off, who normally plays as a lone man, and brought Sam Vokes on instead. It was a 0-0 draw against Brentford. That point actually moved them off the bottom of the table, where they were replaced by those manager-stealing scumbags, Huddersfield Town, or manager-stealing bastards, should I say. Who the bag is, thank you, Baggies, beat them 4-2. So Stoke, maybe a slow baby steps out of that. But Hogan, if he's now, I mean, it's pretty obvious he's third choice. So the Scott Hogan touch count meter is going to maybe have to diversify, change its name.
Maybe this is Scott Hogan's way of like introducing his own like responsible drinking thing. Maybe he found out that we've got a gin sponsor and thought, I can't have that. I can't promote.
Don't mention their name because they only gave us enough gin for one episode. So
for one game of football. During Aston Villa.
What's that fountain, the new fountain outside the library in Birmingham, outside the Rep Theatre and Symphony Hall, more specifically?
I don't know what it's called, but it looks pretty cool.
So I was down there Saturday evening and there was a lot of pissed up Preston fans dancing through it, running through it, running through all the squirts. And then at the end, one of them slipped up and went straight into like an 8-9-year-old girl and wiped her out, which was not ideal. I think he sobered up instantly. But anyway, thank you for Preston for visiting our city and beating the Blues while you were here as well. Right then, I hope it's not going to be one of those seasons, guys, where we're having to... I thought the last show against West Ham, we were, even though we hadn't got the win, that, you know, we were in good spirits and had a good laugh. In this one, in the background, there's that slow resignation that it's not going to be one of those seasons, is it, where we're just chipping away.
I don't want to be one of those teams who goes down, but they go, oh, but weren't they plucky? Didn't they have a good go? Didn't they play really nice football? You think, oh,
they'll get promoted
off
next season, no problem.
Yeah, if they can just keep that team together. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will hopefully have some evolution in the next few games. I mean, it made me laugh. I just saw on Twitter, which I'm distancing myself from more and more these days. Somebody said, I can't believe I'm about to have a poll on whether Smith should be in or out. I said, what do you mean? You can't, just don't do it, you fool. It's like I can't believe I'm forcing myself to do this.
Can't believe I'm forcing my clickbait on everyone.
So if you could vote on the next Villa manager poll on villaunderground.com.
Give your top three suggestion.
Sam Allardyce.
Villa
David
Underground,
Morris.
Smith in, Smith out t-shirts are now available.
You won't believe what's coming Christmas. Stay tuned, whichever
persuasion you are. But no, on a serious note, it's going to be interesting. It's Burnley, because if Burnley are a potential team that could really frustrate us, but
they're a good team.
Yeah,
they're a good
team. They always give any team a real run for their money. They know which games are highlighted. And I think the game against Villa is highlighted with at least three different fluorescent markers as potential 3 points. So
I think Dyche will know that Villa will probably be seeing that as a game we need to win just to keep everything calm and get the shit pointing in the right direction. And he'll just go, do you know what? We can frustrate the hell out of
and
these.
It'll be one of those, where they start talking about, we knew if we, went 1-0 up, it would take the crowd out of the game and turn them against each other, blah, blah, blah. And we'll see what the next, October should be a defining month, actually. We'll have a bit of a insight into what's going to happen, because as we said, we've got to take these opportunities, because you just look at December, we've got 7 fucking games in December and it's going to be no picnic. So the more points you can get now, the better it's going to be, because we're not exactly the best December team based on recent years anyway. Right, anyway, we have a couple of patron shows coming up in the week, so stay tuned to those, where there'll be a few more laughs than potentially this show. But until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Generally, I mean, I can only speak for like the three of us and various of the people who we regularly speak with online. It's kind of like most of the points we make, you're hearing the same point from Dean Smith.
Yeah.
We are nowhere near as critical of our team as Dean Smith is, and Grealish has
John
been
McGinn.
Pretty critical. McGinn's been critical. Mings has been critical. I mean, Grealish slammed his own performance against West Ham. So it's kind of like, it's fair. If Smith says it, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's fair game. He's allowed to. But if someone else says it, it's like, nah,
you're being negative.
It's like, you're not allowed to be negative. I'm like, no, but we're allowed to actually have an opinion.
Yeah, that's all it is. And we've been doing this for fucking years now. So, and we're always right. So shut up.
We've watched enough of Villa to know when Villa are good and when Villa are bad. Right. It's a balanced argument.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.